This is Ben Habib for Our Voice, Politics, Albury Wodonga. Joining me on the Farah Candidates podcast is Matthew Crothers from the Secular Party of Australia. I caught up with Matthew today at La Trobe University's Albury Wodonga campus. Okay, Matthew Crothers, welcome to the Our Voice, Politics, Albury Wodonga election podcast.
Yep, thanks for having me.
No worries. Okay, we'll start off discussing some local issues. You're running for the Secular Party of Australia.
Yes.
What's the emphasis of your party's campaign, and what can you personally bring to the electorate of Farah?
Well, the basis of the Secular Party is to keep church and state separate. That's what forms most of our policies. We like to think of ourselves as science-based, logical and reasonable. Yeah. That's the main platform of the Secular Party. Personally, I feel I can bring some youth with a little bit of experience to the electorate. As well as some alternate views on certain things because of our party policies.
Yeah, and what kind of experience have you got that you can bring to bear to this?
Well, I've been obviously through school, university. I've had three jobs since university. I've also travelled overseas a little bit, but obviously still with youth on my side. So, hopefully we'll appeal to the younger voters.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, can you give the listeners a snapshot of the diverse range of people and communities within the electorate of Farah?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone else has seen exactly the same thing, but Farah is so large, there's just such a diverse range of people from, small farming communities through to the huge urban centre that is Albury Wodonga, as well as, semi-urban areas like where I come from in Deniliquin. Yeah.
And so what are the big issues confronting communities in Farah?
Well, obviously, environment and farming sustainability are the main issues in the regional Farah. Obviously, in Albury, being more urban, it's more business-centred, business-driven, commercial interests and debt levels and things like that. Yeah, so they're the main issues concerning. The region.
And what are your concerns and visions for young people in Farah?
Well, I suppose young people don't really have much opportunity in Farah, in that a lot of them grow up in farming communities but then end up living in the cities because they don't have enough jobs or the right type of jobs that they want to go into to help further their careers. If they had those jobs, then they'd stay in the area and it'd probably help our economy as well at the same time.
Can't argue with that. No. Okay, in your opinion, why does the urban-rural divide, which you've just touched on, why does that divide in service provision continue to exist? And what's your vision for maximising the attention paid to regional communities?
The obvious reason is that there's just so many more people in the urban centres. They've got more of a say. They've got more of a base. So they've got more of the funds. So they get more of the services. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's been. And it's probably, to a certain extent, the way it's going to stay for a while. Obviously, we want to try and get more funding out to regional centres. But to do that, we need to boost the economies of the regional centres to justify spending that money out there, which a lot of the current policies, which have taken away water, put taxes on small businesses, especially trucking companies and things like that with their extra registration. Obviously, we can't boost our regional economies to get those services. So we need to alter that. So we're trying to help out the economies first to get the services second.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Let's turn now to the state of politics in the country at the moment. This election campaign has been rather disappointing in the degree to which the contesters plumb new levels of inane spin and irrelevant personality profiling. That's a pretty harsh statement, but it's a common theme that I've heard from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Some of the candidates I've interviewed for the candidates' forums have blamed the media for this. Some people blame voters for lack of political nous, and other people blame politicians for bringing the debate to its present condition. What's your opinion on the state of political discourse in this country, and how do you think it could be improved?
Well, I personally think it's everyone being too politically correct at the moment. No one's willing to really get up and say exactly what they think because they're worried they're going to offend someone and not get the votes. But that's politics. You've got to get up and say what you say. People aren't always going to agree with you, and you're going to lose those votes, but you've got to stick to what you believe in, say those things, and at the end of the day, if what you believe in is not what Australia wants, then you probably shouldn't be in there anyway. If it is what they want, they'll vote for you. And I think that's the problem, is that, you know, all the major parties are wrapping their candidates in cotton wool and trying to get as many votes as possible rather than sticking to a set certain policies and saying, well, these are our view, if you like us, vote for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's my opinion anyway.
Okay, do you think that the relatively poor performance of the two major parties during this campaign might lead them to leak votes to alternative candidates like yourself?
I really do hope so. It would be nice to have that happen. I think it has already been happening anyway with a lot of people swinging towards the Greens. And I don't know whether this is because the Greens have good policies or whether, as you say, it's just people wanting to get in a different party, vote for a different party.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping it's because of their policies and not people just doing it on a whim. It probably will lead to leak voting, which, as I said, good thing for myself.
Yeah. Okay, one of the reasons why this might be taking place is climate change.
Yep.
And we've seen this issue cause instability in both of the major parties
mm-hmm.
over this parliamentary term. What's your personal position on the climate change debate?
Personal position is it's definitely happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's no two ways about it. As I said in a speech this morning I gave to the Chamber of Commerce here, anybody who tells you it's not happening either doesn't have all the evidence or they've got a different agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My personal view, you know, is the only people qualified to talk on climate change are climatologists,
mm-hmm.
and they all agree that climate change is happening and it's man-made. So all these fringe scientists or people who call themselves climate change scientists who say that it isn't happening aren't climatologists, so they don't have a right to speak on climate change,
mm-hmm.
as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. Okay, what's the policy platform of the Secular Party on climate change?
We want to invest in renewable energies and look at nuclear power as well, mm-hmm. investing in nuclear power. We understand nuclear power is not 100% CO2 neutral, but it's a lot better than our current coal-fired power stations. And it's the really only real baseload technology we have at the moment that can support industry. The renewables can definitely at the moment support the housing and personal use electricity through, you know, solar panels, wind, hydro, all those sort of internal ones, and they're available now. So that's our policies, to try and get more renewables for personal use, but look at nuclear power for the industry.
Yep. Okay, now this is a question that I've asked all the candidates verbatim, because I think it tells us a lot about how serious people are about environmental issues and sustainability. Okay, so to grow the economy necessarily entails increasing resource consumption and greenhouse gas pollution. Therefore, do you think, given that we live on a finite planet, that perpetual economic growth is possible?
I think perpetual economic growth, while not very achievable, is possible. It's the population growth which is not achievable. And the problem with Australia is that the two are linked.
Yeah.
Our economic growth is related to our population growth, and that is unsustainable. We can have a perpetual economic growth by switching to a different style of economics and probably switching to a greener economics. Like investment in the nuclear power and alternative would provide economic growth in the area, especially in Farrow, because of all of our sunny days.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very ripe for the pickings market. But we don't need the extra population to do it. So we can continue to have these jobs and availables and money growth without the population growth. And that's, as I said, that's the main problem in Australia at the moment. The two are linked. We need to find a way to get around it.
Growth of a new green economy.
Yes.
In a sense, growing a sector from scratch or from a low base.
Yes.
Provide that avenue for growth.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. And I can see that happening, yeah.
Yeah, and so Farrow, you think, is well placed to capitalise
on it? Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially out towards Broken Hill area, where they get a lot of sunlight. Mm-hmm. They've got warm temperatures, wind, solar, those heat pump power stations they're designing at the moment. Yeah. Yeah, definitely worth looking at, yeah.
Yep, great. All right. Okay, moving on now more broadly to the economy. What impact has the drought and the global financial crisis had on communities in Farrow over the last few years?
Well, they've both had massive impacts. The drought, obviously, especially in Deniliquin, when I know firsthand, I used to work at the rice mill there. It's closed down. There's just not enough water to run the rice farms, and that was the major industry in Deniliquin. As such, we've lost a lot of people in the area. So obviously house prices have remained stagnant and things like that because of the loss of people due to the drought. Global financial crisis definitely affected Farrow. I think it affected Albury more than it did the regional centres, just for the mere fact that it's more white-collar works here, more economic sort of industry here than there are in the regional areas, which are more agricultural-based.
Yep.
Yeah, so it definitely has hit hard.
Okay, so with that in mind, then, what's your vision for stimulating the economic vitality of the communities in Farrow?
Well, firstly, obviously, we need to get some investment out here, preferably from government, because especially in the agricultural area, the problem is with the drought, we don't have the water to run the agriculture. Mm-hmm. So if you're an agricultural community and you can't do your agriculture, you need some other form of economic, stimulus in there to help out the economy. So that's where the renewables, as I said, come in, and the investment in alternative powers. And I mean that could really, and the green industry could be a real boom for Farrow and getting those regional centres back up and running.
Yep.
For the Albury area, especially being between Melbourne and Sydney, the high-speed rail that is being proposed is definitely a big boom for this area, and linking with better infrastructure and transport facilities for there to get the goods out of Albury and import it cheaper. Yeah,
that would be handy. Yeah. I do remember this debate being had in the early 90s.
Yes.
It'd be nice to see that happen sometime in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay, debt has been an issue at the forefront of this election campaign. What's your position on A, Australia's level of public debt, and B, the disturbing levels of private debt that households and individuals have assumed?
Well, firstly, on the public debt, no one likes having public debt, but there are some good debts. Mm-hmm. And I think that the current debt situation in Australia is not as dire as the Liberals are making it out to be. Mm-hmm. A lot of the leading economists in Australia, believe that Australia's current level of debt is not, it's not too dire, not too critical, and we can pay it off. And the current level of debt is because of the stimulus packages that got us out of this crisis. We probably would be in a worse situation if it's not for the current debt. So, I mean, no one likes debt, but there are good debts and bad debts. The current public debt is not such a bad debt.
And you put it in the context of what's happened.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Personal debt. There is a very alarming amount of personal debt. I just don't know how we can regulate that, because as soon as you start interfering in people's lives, it's not really up to the governments to tell you what to do with your money. It is alarming. I know myself, you try and pay down your debts as quickly as possible, especially the higher interest ones like the home loan, the credit card. But yeah, as I said, I don't really like making or trying to tell people what to do with their money. If they get into financial trouble, it's their responsibility to get out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit harsh, but it's the reality of economics. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll finish up now talking about asylum seekers and border security.
Yep.
So these issues have again become a political football in this election campaign. Why do you think this issue keeps coming up in Australian politics? And are people in this electorate concerned about these issues?
It probably keeps coming up because it's easy votes. Mm-hmm. And it's the way in which the major parties talk about these easy votes, which is the problem. And I think another problem is that Australians aren't really educated about what these asylum seekers are. They've been called illegal immigrants a lot. They're not illegal immigrants.
Mm.
They're asylum seekers. They legally have a right to get to our country by any means they can to flee persecution. And the asylum seekers issue is really centred around the boat people, which as has been, thankfully, in recent media broadcasts, it's been shown it's only a very, very small percentage of our asylum seekers. But it seems to be where all the political barging and footballing, as you say, is going on. Personally, I think we should be welcoming them with open arms. Anybody willing to put their family at risk on a rickety boat across an ocean, really, risking their lives, should be welcomed with open arms, and they should be processed on the mainland.
Yeah.
Well, firstly, first reason is that it's cheaper. It's a lot cheaper to process an asylum seeker on the mainland than it is at Christmas Island. We don't have to ferry workers back and forth from Darwin to Christmas Island, for a start, as well as they can also be integrated into communities, especially regional communities like Darra and Farra, which have labour shortages because we are losing those people. You could integrate the asylum seekers into there until their claims are processed, and it's worked well in certain areas, especially in Wagga, where there's some Sudanese asylum seekers there which have been integrated into the community, and they've been more than welcome because of the labour shortage. So my personal view on asylum seekers is, you know, we need them.
And you said you've travelled overseas.
Yes.
So you know what it's like to expose yourself to different cultures.
Yes.
Do you think bringing asylum seekers into regional communities will help educate locals more about other cultures and people?
It probably would, yeah. I don't think... There's a bit of a stigma about regional people being closed-minded. They're definitely not closed-minded. I mean, you've probably got the same percentage of closed-minded people in regional communities as there are in the major cities.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so I don't know where this stigma comes from. They're definitely welcomed with open arms and integrated, and it would help educate people in regional communities, but also in urban communities. So it goes both ways.
I guess the big difference in regional communities is with a much less contact with people from foreign lands as there would be in the city.
That's right, yeah. But, I mean, that divide's becoming less and less as well. Yeah. With transport and people travelling a lot more, people are seeing different cultures and communities all the time. I don't know too many people who haven't travelled down to Melbourne. I mean, Melbourne's a very, in my interlinguin anyway, Melbourne's a very diverse culture.
Absolutely.
So, if they haven't been exposed to other cultures yet, then they probably live a very sheltered life.
Yeah, of course, the other major difference between city and rural is that the regional people tend to be more friendly. So that's a big plus.
Big plus, yeah, especially for asylum seekers. You need that comfort and help.
Okay, well, 40 years on from the abolition of the White Australia policy, has Australian society properly dealt with the issue of race and ethnicity? This is a tough question.
It is a very tough question. I think we'd like to think we have, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, 90% of Australians don't care what race you are or whatever you are, but it's the 10% or the minority of people that seem to crop their head up in the media all the time and label us as racist and not accepting when really we are. We just got to educate these 10% of people that, you know, being racist is no longer acceptable. And obviously everyone is equal, and that's one of the major policies of the secular party is we're all for equal human rights. Especially with, races, different races, homosexuality, women's rights, everyone's equal. And we think we should be legislating for equal rights for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so how then do we go and have this debate about ethnicity, about asylum seekers, population and related issues in a way that doesn't dredge up these nasty prejudices that exist within that section of the community?
I suppose it's very difficult for that section of the community, but I suppose... Yeah, it's a very, very difficult question again. And then how do you get that 10% of the community to realise that race is not an issue, especially in Australia? I just don't think that we probably will ever get that 10% to fully come on board with the non-racial comments and things like that. And I suppose that's the problem with being in a democracy and freedom of speech, in that they are entitled to think the way they think, wrong or otherwise. But as I said, the majority of people don't think that way, and I don't think it'll be an issue with that because these people are the minority with that sort of racial divide. We've just got to try and get a more fair, arguments from the 90% of people who feel that race is not an issue. I mean, technically, if 90% of the people who feel that race is not an issue, we should have 90% of the say. But for some reason, they're not getting that 90% of the say because it sells papers. It sells newspapers, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it?
So obviously these racist people are getting exposure because that sells newspapers.
Okay, to wrap up then, what message would you like to leave with the voters of Farra?
Well, I'd like to just leave them with the fact that the Secular Party is a new party starting, you know, this election. We're only just recently registered. We do have a lot of different views on ways of getting things done. And if they would like to check out our website, there's some our policies are all up on there.
And we are linked to that from the podcast.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, no, very good. We're a science, logic, fact based policy party. We just want to get our ideas out there and check us out.
Outstanding. Yeah. Okay, Matthew Crothers, thanks for joining us on the Farrow Election Forum podcast.
No worries. Thanks, Ben.